A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book. A romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland, and this evening we're coming to you from the lovely Hayfield Manor Hotel down in County Cork, and I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Executive Head Chef Mark Staples. Mark, it's a pleasure to meet you. How are you doing?
Pleasure to be here. I'm doing good. It's Sunday evening. It's relaxing time now.
Yeah.
Taking it easy.
I must say, for me as a Corkonian, it's always lovely to come home to Cork, and I'm really getting spoiled here in the opulent surroundings of Hayfield Manor. But before we talk about all the great things here, love to talk a bit about yourself, right? You've had a really interesting career to date, and born, I think, in Staffordshire, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Born in Staffordshire, Burton on Trent, which is a small town, brews Bass beer. So I was pretty average at school, kind of thing, not excelling anything. And I fell into the whole catering thing. I fell into whole catering, washing pots. I was lucky enough, saw lobsters, saw anything going on. And that's what got me interested into the kitchen experience.
Yeah, I mean, and did you have like a family member, or like some people talk about, you know, they got their love of food from their grannies, or learned how to, they watched their grannies making scones? Or...
No, my dad was a useless cook. He could do stir fries and that's about it. While my mum was a home economics teacher, a very good home economics teacher. So we always had fresh food at the table. So it was always something cooking. And from there, I got my food taste kind of thing, food knowledge. So you knew how to do a basics from my mum, really.
Yeah.
Bread, sauces, things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, and then you went off to, I mean, you didn't start small, really. I mean, you went up to Scotland and you started in a very famous place, the Glen Eagles Hotel, where you debuted as first commis chef.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before that, I did a little bit of training in France. I went to France College. I needed to take a year out from college, and I went over just on the outside of Paris and did my training there, the apprentice there. Then after that, which was very good, I went to Glen Eagles Hotel. Big Strathern restaurant. God, we were probably doing about 100 covers every night. And from there, it was an old style kitchen where you learned how to do stocks, your soups, your sauces, your fish, your garnish, your larder section. What's good about that, you travel all around the kitchen and you learn the basics, and then you go again, and that's when you get a demi or chef to party. So it was a real good traditional learning ground, which people need nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, and Glen Eagles, of course, I suppose would be famous for golf, right? Did you have a lot of cranky customers? Like, you know, some of those golfers would be pretty demanding, I'd imagine.
I was lucky. I was always in the back and kind of in five-star hotels, wherever, we're always demanding up to a certain point for customers. We always try to make the customer's experience excelling. We're wonderful, depending on what they want. Glen Eagles was also very good at that. The golf course was fantastic. I remember kind of cheeky wintry nights snowboarding on golf courses, sledging on golf courses. One of my regrets is that I couldn't play golf. They offer golf lessons there. And because me being 6'7", I could never get clubs big enough for myself to play golf. I didn't have time to play golf either, looking back at it. And so that, cooking-wise, it gave me a great experience, fantastic experience.
Yeah, and of course, Scotland, I suppose, is another, like Ireland, as amazing produce kind of on your doorstep, really, from salmon to all the beautiful produce that they have.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's only getting better now as people are more willing to pay and develop, and people become more educated in food. So they have scallops, they have lobsters, they have lovely venison up there as well. Highland lamb, fantastic produce. And the scenery around Scotland is fantastic. Get up hill walking and doing that. You have four seasons in one day in Scotland.
Yeah.
It's
a bit like here in Cork.
Cork's a bit wetter.
Yeah. And then you decided to hang up your sporran then, right? And you headed to London, to the Big Smoke.
Oh, to the Big Smoke.
Teatro.
Teatro restaurant with Stuart Gills. Learned a lot. Without a doubt, did 6 months in London. London capital, well worth for anyone. It's a tough place to live, London, and it's a tough place to work, but you learn a lot about yourself. I learned so much about food myself, the energy, the drive it takes to be a Michelin star chef from there. Yeah, it was interesting times.
Is that, we'll talk about, because I know you brushed shoulders with Gordon Ramsay as well briefly, and of course, you know, yeah, always interesting to hear.
It was one of his consultancy restaurants when we first started up. It was always interesting to hear. So Stuart was running the restaurant and Gordon probably pop in once or twice a week to touch base with Stuart. And my nickname in London was Big Boy, being 6'7" and kind of banging my head off a canopy.
So it was height related,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, height related, no, height related, Big Boy. But London, listen, London is where the top restaurants used to be back then. Nowadays, you can go to Edinburgh, you can go to Dublin, you can come down to Cork, and there's great restaurants around Cork area now, Michelin stars. So if you want to be a chef, and if you want to, you don't have to go to London. Well, in that era, I had to go to London to have the Michelin experience.
Yeah, so and was there a few visits then with lots of expletives, or was that all for TV?
You could say that. He's a very talented chef. He's kind of he's got the showmanship. He's very good, you know.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely, highly entertaining. And I mean, that was great. So I guess a lot of chefs would tell you, like London, as you said, they're a difficult one. It's a real, you know, I mean, of course, if you pardon the pun, a melting pot. But at the same time, you really can learn so much there, right?
Yeah.
And did you decide? I mean, was that where you were going to stay, or what happened? I mean, how did you end up in the Merrion Hotel then?
Well, in Dublin, I was in London. I didn't want to go back home. There was a kind of a pride of myself. London wasn't working out for me. And I think it's hard as a chef to say, right, take a step back. It's not working out for me. No one likes to be defeated. But I was like, no, this is not for me. It's not working out. Didn't particularly like London. And then I wanted to go to another city. I wanted to leave England. Didn't want London. Didn't been to Edinburgh there. So Dublin just came up. The Merrion Hotel was advertising. I was recommended to go and work with Ed Cooney of Merrion Hotel. And that's how I ended up there in Dublin, Merrion Hotel, 5-star hotel. That's where I met my wife. Met my wife, D Connolly, D Staples now. And she was a restaurant manager. And I was the executive sous chef, but worked up to executive sous chef level there now. Fond memories of Merrion Hotel.
Yeah, I mean, and you entered in at the best. I mean, the Merrion, I suppose, would be one of the best hotels in Dublin. So,
yeah.
I mean, you were obviously highly talented and you were snapped up by the Merrion.
Yeah, I was lucky, without a doubt. I remember asking Ed for a chef de partie role. And in my experience, he still won't give it to me. He said, no, you have to be a demi. You have to prove me that you will be a chef de partie level. I was like, okay. So listen, I took it and I took the experience and I learned a lot. And I think that's important for chefs as well, to do the basics, to learn the basics, to do that and to work up the ladder. A lot of people nowadays are just getting promoted because we're desperate for chefs. The Merrion Hotel, yeah, fine standard of food. And that through the back of house as well. If you go to a 5-star hotel, you're going to have a good back of house. I learned a lot there. I did fish, did sauce, did larder, did lots of management courses, lots of courses. It was a good place. And of course, you have Toner's Pub across the road.
Oh.
We had plenty of Guinness. Plenty of Guinness at the end of a hard night.
Yeah, I think that must be one of the top sites when you stay in the Merrion Hotel.
Without a doubt.
I mean, of course, a lot of famous people. I mean, the Merrion would be really one of the places, I mean, where the playground of the rich and famous when they come to Dublin. Was that, of course, I suppose, challenging again, like, but not maybe from your previous past with Glen Eagles, etc.?
I think because there's so much of a standard and you get so used to seeing people, it becomes a norm. I think kind of you become a norm to catering for celebrities and as corny and cliche as it sounds, everyone's a little bit of a VIP list. Personally, as a chef, I look through and see a VIP list, but I don't really take much attention of it because I want all the 100 covers or the 80 covers to go out as good as a VIP would be.
Yeah.
It's more of the amenity plates, chocolate dip strawberries, things like that, that would interest me more.
Brilliant. And then after the exciting, heights of Dublin, you ended up here in Cork.
In Cork, boy. Well, funny enough, where we're sitting now, my wife grew up just at the end of the road in College Knock. There used to be a lovely shop there at College Knock, and that's where my wife grew up. Dublin was fantastic to us. We had our first summer at Connor in the city centre, in the hospital there now. So Connor is age 10 now. We love Dublin. It was very good. Playground, great place, great social life. But the cost of living was just crippling. So we decided to move down to Cork. Hayfield Manor came up as a job opportunity, somewhere where I'd always kept an eye on, always had a great name around Cork. And when the job came up, I went for it. Had to do it.
I mean, Hayfield, I suppose, would be the Merion of Odin, I suppose, if I'm not being too...
It would be, without a doubt. And also, it's a challenging place. Kind of what interests me now was the challenge of coming to, moving family down to Cork. And then also was the challenge, Hayfield Manor, having the two restaurants, having the private dining rooms, having the afternoon tea service, having the lovely grounds that you could do outside catering on. Personally, I need to be challenged. Every day I need to come in. I don't want the same day being the same. So the challenge is important to me.
Yeah, and I suppose you've trained and developed over 24 chefs. We're going to talk about that a bit in part two. But amazing here, because Hayfield Manor is very interesting because it is, of course, it's a family run. It's part of the Blue Book, which, of course, is they have a certain sort of authenticity to what they actually do. And the Merion, interestingly enough, where you were, was also a Blue Book member.
Blue Book member, I guess it's run by the Scally family, who actually they have a very import into the hotel. Kind of, we're sitting in the same room where I did my first interview here with the Scally family to get involved. The Hayfield Manor has been part of the Blue Book for 2007, and I think kind of as a chef, you've thumbed through these guidebooks, you've thrown through Michelin star books, and I flummed through the Blue Book to see where to work or to get ideas or to see pictures of these places. So that's where I got my interest in here as well. And also, being a family run restaurant, you get lots of input, you get lots of kind of decision making, which is good.
And you came here, Mark, when again?
2007 I came here, so I've been here 7 years. Seven years now I've been here. Great development, personal and kind of personally great development as a chef. But also as a colleague and getting to know people and to develop people. It's been very interesting.
Now, listen, that brings us along nicely, Mark, to your first choice of music this evening. What have you picked for us?
The first choice of music would be The Farm Altogether Now. A couple of reasons for that. It's the first concert I went to, live concert I ever went to. Second of that, it used to be played as an English football song, Altogether Now, when they were there and I was in Scotland. So that has fond memories for me now.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. We're coming to you from the banks of my own lovely Lee this evening from Cork and lovely Hayfield Manor. I'm joined here by my special guest, Mark Staples. Mark, that was lovely to hear your journey, how you ended up coming to Cork. And I suppose one of the things about Cork really is Cork people love their food.
Mm-hmm. They certainly do. And they're very quick to tell you when you've made a mistake as well. But I love cooking for Cork people and I love cooking the Hayfield Manor. We have to make sure we have a great standard of food here. I guess I do that by using local produce as much as possible. Having ducks from just up the road, having Ross Carberry sausages and bacon on there, I try to keep as much produce there. When you have great ingredients, it's very hard to make a mistake.
In my job, I get to eat a lot of food. Sometimes I have to sort of try to contain myself. But beautiful goat's cheese last night here. Beautiful chicken liver pate. I mean, it was almost foie gras. Now I have to say, it was really beautiful, very, very luxuriant, and gorgeous beef. And you know, again, beautiful free range chicken, but all sourced locally. And it's lovely the way you mention. And I mean, a lot of people, you know, where it all comes from. And of course, we'll chat about the English market in a sec. But
I had the pleasure of meeting Jane from a Sala Goat's Cheese, lovely lady up in Dublin, and it's one of the first customers who knocked on the back door and said, can I carry on supplying you? I was like, of course you can. So Jane is a lovely woman at Sala Goat's Cheese, comes in every week, delivers her goat's cheese, and it's important to have this relationship with people as well, because she's helped me out of the hole. When you run out of goat's cheese, Jane will be at your back door there in a day or two, not a problem. The beef you mentioned is from the Loch, a lovely walk area kind of in Cork City. There's lovely butchers there, Pat O'Connell Butchers, the Loch there. So again, as much as possible, the ducks or Skegon or ducks from West Cork. I guess through coming back from the lockdown, we've, like everywhere, we've had a shortage of chefs, so I've kind of condensed it into one kitchen. So we're doing one small menu, we're doing 8, 8 and 8, small menu. Still a bit of pressure on there, guys, but it makes it more sustainable for guys. We concentrate on cooking and getting things right. And to make it more interesting for guests, so maybe two or three nights we're doing specials for halibut, the braised short rib of beef, the ribeye steaks. Just makes it more interesting for a customer, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that is one thing. I mean, about we're saying here, the produce, it is everywhere you go here in Cork. And it's interesting because in Dublin, actually, you don't have an English market. But where people actually go, I mean, and like my aunts go here and they buy the food every day or second day. It's an institution. It's like tripe, drisheen, crew beans.
It's on the very first market stall as you walk in, isn't it, kind of thing. The English market is an institution. It's people going have one round, we have tourists, there's wine shops, there's cheese shops, there's lovely charcuterie shops, fresh veg market, butchers, and it's a place where people are still using a skill that's been passed down from generation to generation. Butchers are butchering the meat off the side of cow in front of you. You see the drisheen, which is like the pig's blood sausage.
Yeah, yummy.
And the tripe.
I think you have to be born with that, Mark. Stay away from that stuff.
Acquired taste, tripe and grisheen.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we've been through an unprecedented time, right, in the hospitality business. And, you know, I mean, I saw here yesterday, wonderful to see, you know, busy, loads of people here enjoying themselves. Obviously, very challenging time for you. I mean, I saw there, I mean, you really have a passion about bringing chefs, you know, bringing them on and developing chefs and I suppose getting them excited about this business. How did you cope with all that? I mean, very challenging time for you. Did you keep your staff? What did you have to bribe them all?
How did I cope? Personally, I coped from going 110 miles an hour to nothing. And literally, like everyone, it was overnight. We weren't doing any cooking, so I had the pleasure of summer with the children, and the children kept me busy and everything. I learned to make cakes, maybe a few scones, sourdough bread. I tried to do sourdough bread. It's like a pancake.
I think the whole country was on the sourdough bread thing.
And the kids were looking at me, what's that? And the whole schooling kept me busy through lockdown. I felt sorry for the generation who didn't have that, who were locked in their apartments, who were... So I kind of phoned my team up, did text messages, kind of did a few WhatsApp calls, made sure that they were okay as much as possible. Luckily enough, when we did open, I had a core team come back. And we've gone from there. To keep myself busy, we just have to... But there's a little bit of get on in life. You have to have a bit of, as a chef, things will go wrong and you're pulling your hair out in there, but take a step back, breathe calm and get back on the train.
Yeah, I want to do a program about things that go wrong, but nobody will talk to me about that. Oh, like nobody will tell me the truth. Private and confidential.
Confidential. Of course. It's the stupid things that it's the people's mistakes, and you're just there going.
Yeah. And I mean, when you are training chefs now, you have how many chefs do you have under you here now in Hayfield?
How many chefs do I have now on the roster? Not enough. I think like every industry, I want more and more chefs to come on board, because the more you have, the bigger team you get and the easier it gets for everyone, and you can spend more time training. At the present moment, I have about 15 chefs. I want to get up to a headcount of 24 and about 6 kitchen porters, 6 kitchen stewards. The biggest problem is having time to train them, show them what to do, which is so important in life, because if I don't share my wealth experience with the commis chefs or the people who are coming on board, then you're not going to get chefs come through. And I think that's what I learned, is you can't expect chefs to come in and be able to cook straight away. You have to show them, you have to gradually get them into it.
I was chatting to one or two young chefs recently, and they said they were kind of, you know, it was touch and go whether they were going to just go off and learn how to drive a lorry or something, because they were worried about, you know, with what's happened and, you know, but they weren't really too worried about, you know, the stereotypical shouting and roaring in a kitchen. Your management style now, how would you describe your own style? I mean, you obviously have to be careful these days.
We have to be very careful. See, I guess going back, right, listen, I was probably the biggest idiot of a commis chef and probably made plenty of mistakes, so I got shouted and roared at plenty of times. Did do me any harm? No, but it's not acceptable nowadays. Yes, there's still times I'm pulling my hair out and I'm going, come on, please give me a break. But my management style now is, I think, a little bit more relaxed. For chefs probably would say, what is he talking about, he's still a nutter. But I'm trying to get more relaxed. I'm trying to train them. Things go wrong. It's not brain surgery we're doing here. Things will go wrong. It's how we cope with things go wrong. Yeah, we have to learn from our mistakes, which is very important. The commis chefs, I get it. But it's the pay isn't great. The conditions can be not great. You want Friday, Saturday nights off with your girlfriend or your partner. You can't get that all the time. I get why people aren't coming into the industry. It's not an attractive industry to come into. But it's an industry where if you work hard, give your best, turn up on time, and have a bit of charisma and a bit of spark about it, you're going to go places. You will get on in the industry if you're good and if you want to. So yeah, it's not an industry that tolerates faint-hearted. You're not going to get on if you don't want to. But if you want it, you're good. Yeah, the world's your oyster, you know? And it's a great industry to go travelling with.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you can see here as well, because it's all about teams, really, isn't it? I mean, what I suppose you love as a chef, your primary function has been, you know, menus and cooking. Yeah. But now, I guess, you're running a business, aren't you?
Oh, completely. And kind of, it changes as you go up the levels. When you first come, you're very worried about peeling potatoes. I'm like, I have enough mash or whatever. And then as you get to executive head chef, it's about figures. It's about running the team, who's going to come up. It's about managing a team and jigsaws. Sometimes the rosters can look like game nuts and crosses because you're crossing people off and doing everything. It's part of what we do as the head chefs. And as you go up the level, you find yourself stepping back from the whole cooking side and going more into the whole managing side of the figures, of the menus, of the prices. And it's what you put in and it's what you get out, you know?
I mean, I'm not going to reveal any secrets, but I know there were some very famous people staying here recently from a particular show in America that I love, right?
I think we all do, but they visited Cork and got Cork on the map, didn't they?
Yeah,
lenses and
so, I mean, would you get a lot of sort of bizarre requests for, like, you know, spring water from the mountains of Mourne, or you know what I mean?
No, I don't think so. We don't get those requests, and I think a lot of those requests are for people trying to, PAs or whatever, trying to kind of keep in with their boss. What we do here, we do cater for requests. We cater for whatever we can, kind of celiacs, gluten-free, vegans. We will always try to adapt and change a menu to make people more comfortable with their stay, because that's what we're all about here, making people comfortable.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, Mark, I mean, with the foods now, with, you know, with the sort of, we've so much processed food out there, I mean, it's probably something you'd be passionate about. Mm-hmm. It's become quite difficult, isn't it, in terms of wondering what's good for you or what's not when everything's all packaged up, isn't it? It's a change. Everything's changed so much.
It is. Everything has changed so much. But again, it goes back to the background. It's like I was saying to you about cooking at home with your mom and having good, wholesome food. If you have good, wholesome food, local produce, good fertilizer, good growing, good farms, you're onto a winner anyway, aren't you, you know?
Yeah. And do you find that now here? Do you change, obviously you have to regularly change your menu. Where do you get your inspiration for that? The English market, I suppose?
the English market, the farmers, the suppliers, things like that, YouTube, photographs, whatever. I also leave it up to a team to have inputs as well. So we change the menus 4 times every year. We have specials going on every night, and the team come up with these ideas and the menus, and we do tastings and we develop from there. Because if I tell them what to do, it's going to be very boring for them all the time, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, that's lovely. So there's kind of an input from the whole team. And it's nice because you do have to keep things in this business, obviously, you know, for your regulars and stuff. Mm. You have to, even though some people would eat the same thing every time they come to a place, like myself, in old-fashioned.
But it's hard for chefs nowadays as well, because we're coping with so much. We're coping with shortage of staff, shortage of supplies, rising costs. It's hard not to get out of a rut of always doing the same. You want to change and you want to develop. And if you can, keep pushing, keep doing what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, wonderful. Now, what brings us along to your nicely to your second choice of music this evening? What have you picked for us?
I think my second choice would have to be Ed Sheeran, Castle on the Hill. He's coming to Cork next year now. We have tickets there. We're going to take the whole family out. And Castle on the Hill has fond memories of travelling around France on a summer holiday with the family.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland, coming to you from the lovely Hayfield Manor in Cork City. I'm joined by Mark Staples, the executive head chef. Mark, that was a lovely piece of music there, very enjoyable. Yeah. Hayfield Manor, of course, opened here in 1966. And as we were chatting earlier, beautiful five-star hotel here. Quality, exceptional service has been sort of, you know, loads of accolades. I mean, it really is. It's almost become a bit of an institution here, hasn't it?
It has. It certainly has. It's an institution. But it's also kind of coming to the end of November now. You're going to see the Christmas lights and Christmas trees outside and the Christmas decorations. And people actually come up and take a wander up and have a look at the Christmas lights. It's certainly an institution.
Yeah.
And just across from UCC as well.
Yeah, it's really, the location is wonderful because, I mean, you're only, what, I suppose, if you were to look at things, you were chatting about other things to do here, I mean, you know, Blarney Castle's 30 minutes up the road, you know, 10 minutes walk into town. But it's lovely and tranquil here. What I love about this is, like, you're in the city, but you're not in the city.
Yeah.
And isn't that
peaceful? You could be anywhere. Yeah. And that's partly of the lovely grounds as well. You have a garden at front and back where you can just sit and relax. It is... a tranquil oasis in the city. Yeah.
And coming up to, I'm going to say that word that I'm sure you love, Christmas, right?
Oh,
Every chef loves that word. Coming up to, because I mean, are you getting ready now? There's always a challenge. I know you watch some chefs on television and they're doing goose and they're doing spatchcock, turkey, you know, I mean, or chicken, whatever. But, you know, are you kind of more of an old favourites, or, you know, give people kind of the usual stuff, or do you try and mix it up a bit?
We have turkey and ham on the menu. I don't think you could do a December menu without turkey and ham. With apricot and sage stuff, and you have to have that, the basics. But then on top of that, I would try to mix it up because, God, I can't do turkey and ham for a month. So we do mix it up. On Christmas Day, I'll be having turkey and ham with family, which is nice. But yeah, but kind of we mix it up and we will be particularly busy here.
Yeah,
We're gearing up for a busy December, and after the last two, we're looking forward to a busy one as well, you know?
Yeah, brilliant. My family, they were butchers in the market there, the English market, and it's Christmas Eve. You had the smell of spiced beef wafting out of a big pot. It's a huge thing here in Cork. And of course, Tom Durkin, I was in school with Tom. He's the spiced beef king of Ireland, isn't he?
Spiced beef, yes. Certainly a Cork thing, yeah. I remember that now. Lovely. Slow cooked, isn't it? Slow cooked.
Yeah. You'll definitely have to put that. I mean, I'm not whether you're planning it right or not, but if you were to put that on the menu, it could be very popular, Mark.
Spiced beef afternoon tea sandwich.
There you go.
Yeah, with a bit of mustard.
Yeah,
we should be there.
Yeah, seriously. Is that? It's lovely here because people come and stay here. Some hotels they close for Christmas, right? But you don't here. You can come and you can have the whole Christmas experience.
You can have
here.
The whole Christmas experience from Christmas Eve to Christmas Day and Steamers Day. Have a whole experience. Santa comes down the chimney with lovely gas, with lovely log fires. We have there. Santa comes down, visit all the children. We have mince pies. We have music going on. So it's a whole package and a whole enjoyment, definitely.
And do you find now, I mean, after COVID, right? I mean, have things changed for you? I mean, I know everyone's wearing masks still, and we're just after coming through the last of some regulations having dropped, even though masks are still, I think people still feel more comfortable even wearing them when they're wandering around or walking around, don't they? Have things changed a lot for you here now?
Have things changed? I think that we're going back to the new norm. And what I mean by that is, yes, we probably might have to wear masks up to February time. We're getting back to normal. Things are opening up. I think what's changed is people's maybe perception of restaurants and chefs and waitresses and waiters is that they're thankful to be able to go out. They're thankful to be able to have a pint and a crack with their friends again and come out for a nice meal. And I hope that carries on. And I hope people will also realise that how much work and dedication goes into working in hotels and restaurants and the sheer skill set in people, you know?
Yeah, when you've got some time off yourself, right? I'm sure you do.
I do.
What's your favourite thing to cook at home? What do you like to do? Or, I mean, we can talk about guilty pleasure, what do you love to cook yourself when you're away from all the work?
I'd cook a nice juicy steak. I'd go up to O'Connell's and have a nice juicy steak. Kids sit into bed nice and early and sit up and have a nice juicy steak and a glass of red. I like batch cooking fresh food. So kind of I get some lovely chicken and maybe do a chicken chorizo casserole, bring batch it for the next day for the kids to have while I'm working away. I love having a bacon and egg sandwich. and the yolk just run down a nice strong cup of tea. That would be my guilty pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. That could be nothing. There could be nothing as nice as that, actually. And I mean, for yourself, the great food groups, I suppose, of the world, like, you know, Italian, French, Thai, except, do you sort of like to bring those in here as well? Or is there any ones that you particularly think that's my go-to place? I'm more comfortable with those? Or
I think I'm more comfortable with European food. Yeah. Kind of going through my background and my training, it's all European. I've had the pleasure of going over to Thailand and eating street market food and things like that. And I would be more European trained. So that's classics me, kind of a beef Wellingtons, for fillets, for the holdover soles.
Yeah, yeah. And when, you know, having come from the UK and living here now, I mean, have you noticed, are people the same everywhere? Or I know you get international people coming here, so I suppose the question might be a bit silly, but I mean, is it like no going back now? I mean, are you here?
Oh, Jesus, no going back to England. I'll still be a blowing in 20 years' time around Cork and Blarney. No, Blarney and Cork City is my home now. I feel very welcome and very fortunate to have a lovely home and family there, you know.
Yeah, and you would have had a great, you would have had a huge, I suppose, before COVID, like, you would have had a huge American clientele coming here as well, I think. Now that travel's opened up, are you looking forward? Like, that's probably going to come back again. I suppose bookings, I heard already, like, a lot of Americans for next year coming here again.
Bookings are looking very good for next year. International travel's looking good. I'm looking forward to my holidays, get port and sun up and sitting down in the sun. But I'm also looking forward to welcoming people back without the uncertainty. I think the last 2 years have been very uncertain on people, and hopefully next year, 2022, will be more certain and have more of a structure in place.
Yeah, and when you go out now yourself, right, or you go out to a restaurant, or, I mean, I suppose people, you know, it's what you do. Would you be watching everything? I mean, are there things that you just totally relax, or are there things that you hate? Are, like, too much service, not enough service?
No, I totally switch off. Myself and wife, we just go out for experience. No, it depends where you go. And if you're going to top-end restaurant, paying top-end prices, you want the service, you want that. But then if you're just going down to local chipper or the bistro or wherever, you pay for what you get, don't you? It's a bit like 5-star hotel in the Blue Book. You're going to have good service, good value, good rooms. And that's something to go by, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, what you were saying there, Mark, about, you know, the new norm in hospitality. Do you think now going forward, again, that people will just, it will just all become back to normal again?
Yeah. Judging from my kitchen, but from the customers and reservations, we're going back to normal. We're doing the big numbers, we're doing two restaurants, we're doing the afternoon tea. But then I think people still need to be aware of social etiquette and washing their hands and wearing a mask and giving a bit of people distance and time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And is staff, I mean, I know you mentioned it earlier, is getting staff now a big problem? I mean, it seems to be, is it easing off a bit, or?
No, it's... First of all, staff just winds me up. Like, staff, it's team members. I love the word team because we're a team and we all try to get along and get on together. It is a problem. It's a terrible shortage and this crisis. I think the government are going to have to look if they want to carry on. I mean, the industry is opening visas and doing something. We don't have stamp twos anymore. We don't have people coming in that want to do a job anymore. But what we do have is maybe one or two people coming in who we have to grab and who we have to train and who we have to encourage and develop and see how we get on. I think the Europeans will hopefully come back. Hopefully that we'll come over and train again and be here and bring their new ideas and new cooking techniques, new cooking skills, new ideas to our menus, you know?
Yeah. Have you, a lot of chefs now, Mark, you know, they become TV celebrities, they write books, you know, it becomes a part of, you know, it's a kind of a progression thing. I was telling you earlier, right, I thought a great name for a TV programme for you would be The Staples Diet, right? What do you think?
Get me on the TV, 10% commission, I'll be
there. Staples Diet, I think it would be great.
Love it.
YouTube channel, maybe.
YouTube could be. What about, what food do we do? Would you do...
You could do the staples, I guess. How many of those are there?
Chicken and cheese casserole. Chicken and cheese casserole, staples diet, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. We were chatting earlier about, travelling and stuff and people's inspiration. Do you think now that when people come here to Cork, what would you suggest? I mean, if you were to do a 3-day in your experience, if you were to come here and do a 3-day stay here in Hayfield, what would you say to the must-dos, aside from, of course, having some of your lovely food?
The must-dos would be the beaches around West and East Cork, Garvoe Beach, Charlestown Beach. We love having days up there if you get the weather. Going down by the walks for Shaky Bridge, down by the Lee Field, that's always a classic there now, and kills an hour or two, and it's a lovely walk down there. And have a pint of Guinness, or have a pint of Murphy's in the local, the pubs and the restaurants and the music scene, it is fantastic around Cork, and go and experience it.
Yeah, the Mutton Lane, the Oyster.
That's the one I was thinking, the Oyster Tavern, the Mutton Lane.
It's like you go back in time in there, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and then hopefully if you
have the Roundy House.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And hopefully if you have the weather, sit out in the garden, Hayfield Manor, enjoy a glass of wine and just watch a wheel go by. You might even see a slab if you're lucky.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. But I won't be here long. I really enjoyed my stay here, Mark. It really, really is a treat to stay here. And I was saying to you earlier, the attention to detail was something that I thought was really nice, in the rooms, lip balm and little French presses. And, it's a real treat, isn't it?
It is a real treat. And kind of, I guess that's why people come here. They go by the Blue Book, they go by 5-star hotels. And they expect that standard, don't they? But with that standard, there comes pressure to excel and to be good, you know?
Brilliant. Well, listen, Mark, it's been wonderful to have you as a guest this evening. Thanks for joining me. What have you picked now for your final piece of music?
Oh, final piece of music. I often kick back in the office, play it as loud as I can, and just relax while it's playing. Queen, Under Pressure.